need to spend too much time explaining the unbelievable tragedy of what happened here. Right? V'hila yoda ish. And she had never known a man, she had never been married. V'atehi chog b'Yisrael. And it became a concept in Klal Yisrael that what? Miyamim yamima. This was done back from that time. And every so often, Teilachno b'nois Yisrael letanois levas Yiftach. The girls of Klal Yisrael go to weep over the daughter of Yiftach, Hagaravi, Gilad, Abbas Yamin Bashana. 4 days out of the year.
Why 4 days?
This became the minig. This was a minig that developed. 4 days a year they would spend weeping over the daughter of Yiftach. So here. So like this, a 4 day mourning period, an annual mourning period for the daughter of Yiftach. Okay, so let's take it meanwhile at face value, which is how Chazal take it, and let's just put it into perspective. What happened here was terrible. Could it not have been averted? Could have easily been averted. He could have gone to the closest person who's a person who's training to be a rabbi, not a world expert rabbi, person who's beginning to train to be a rabbi, or a person who's been to yeshiva, and they would have told him nothing doing, the whole thing doesn't begin. It's in Machlokes in the Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan says he would have, how would his vow have manifested? He would have had to pay her value. Rabbi Shulkish says not even that. It was just nothing. The whole thing is just void. But that didn't happen. How did that not happen? How did that not happen? So, here, there are two possible approaches. One thing that Chazal say is that there was the godmother at the time, there was Pinchas. But, Yiftach and Pinchas didn't have a relationship. Which is very problematic, because the leader of the Jewish people, if he's not in position to be a leader from the spiritual perspective, he should definitely be guided by the spiritual authorities of the generation. But they didn't have a relationship. Why? Because Yiftach felt now he was appointed king of the Jewish people. It's only fitting, king meaning equivalent to king. The Shefet was basically equivalent to king. It's only fitting that Pinchas should come to me. And Pinchas said, I'm the God Ladar. I've been the God Ladar for a long time. Kain Gadol. It's fitting that Yiftach should come to me. Now, was this a direct conflict? I don't know if they were actually, you know, each one refused to go to the other one. Just each one was kind of waiting for the other to come to him. The nice that they never developed a relationship. Therefore, because of this, what happened to them? Which are a couple of points to get out of this. First of all, we have to realize, Yiftach, as we said before, what was the greatness of Yiftach? If Yiftach was named as a Shevet B'Yisrael and he merited that special divine assistance, the Spirit of Hashem came upon him, that means that he was selected as one of the choicest people of his generation, while here we're busy stressing how coarse he was, how ignorant he was. So it's as we said before, it's as we said last week, that this was a very, very unique example of Hashem's subjective analysis of man. And that is that, again, if you're looking on the objective level, Yiftach was not a Torah authority. And if you wanted to know who to ask your shailas to, Yiftach was certainly not the man to ask. Right? And there were many people, most of Klal Yisrael was on a higher level than him. Right? He didn't grow up even properly in his father's home. Never got a proper education. But yet, as we say, Hashem looks at greatness, he looks at each individual, what he made out of himself and his circumstances. Yiftach never had the opportunity to learn. Yiftach never received proper instructions. But Yiftach was exposed to the general spirit of the Jewish people, and he internalized that, and he had a very, very, very deep and burning and passionate Yirat Shamayim and Avas Hashem dedication for the Jewish people. A very, very, very strong sense of conscience, of doing the right thing. As we'll see, coming up, we mentioned this last week, but we'll see coming up later too. He lived on the frontier. Basically, his life was dedicated. He had a gang of rough guys. But what were they? What were they doing? Usually, here a gang of rough guys, the type of people you have to cross the street to the other side. Here, they were standing at the front, warding off intruders. things like that, because of his care for the Jewish people. And this was a person who was willing to stick his neck out in order to help out the Jewish people. And he had to rely on miracles. So yes, he was, Hashem was actually identifying, as only Hashem could do, Hashem was identifying greatness that lied under a very coarse, ignorant, and simple exterior. But there was very, very deep greatness there. Very deep greatness. To the extent that we might even say, perhaps, that Yiftach was one of the greatest people of his generation on the subjective level. A person who worked hardest. A person who was most conscientious.
So, sort of based on that, if someone has a few dollars to invest in a kollel, one would probably get more schar for investing in, let's say, an Or Sameach, or a place where people are putting, let's say, where on a subjective level people are putting their all in, versus a place where versus another yeshiva.
Well, the question is, who said that in the high caliber yeshiva you don't have people who are putting their all in? It could also happen that it happens to be the Gadol Hador who was the one who put in the most efforts, which is usually the case, by the way. The people who emerge as the great leaders of the generation are the people who put in their all. Right? It isn't it. Sometimes when we hear this idea, we think also that automatically means that a person who knows too much is not that person. No, the fact that a person is exposed to the right things doesn't mean that he can't be that person. Right? You didn't lose your chance if you are learning. He said about Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz had a brilliant mind. He was known for his immense genius. You meet any Shmulevitz, any of the grandchildren today, stop talking to little kids, their minds are whizzes, right? Reb Chaim Shmulevitz was known for his immense genius. But his son-in-law described how you saw him sitting and learning. He was an old man. He already had been through these things. There was a man who knew Kol HaTorah Kulo. He said, I saw him sitting over a Rambam, and he was so intensely focused that he was like grunting with the effort in trying to plumb the depths a little further to resolve yet another difficulty. So on the contrary, the rule is that the greatest people of the generation are the people who have invested the most. But, like we say, you don't have to have started out in the lowest place in order to be the one who invested the most. Yiftach was a case of someone who was. But certainly we will say that it certainly doesn't go by objective learnedness. That's why you also see that we never had a phenomenon in Klal Yisrael that a person became recognized as a Torah leader. A person who was naturally brilliant, things came easy to him. Were always people who toiled. There were geniuses and there were people who were not such big geniuses. There was a Vilna Gaon. But the Vilna Gaon, knew what his Talmidim said about him. How he killed himself over his learning.
But he knew the Chumash, complete Chumash at 5 years old.
That's right.
He was like,
that's right.
He was like Mozart, Lahavdil.
And yet, he killed himself over his learning. That's right. He came to...
Though?
What's that?
Isn't that contradictory?
It's contradictory if there's a ceiling to how deep you can go in learning. But if there isn't, if you understand that learning is as deep kibayachol as the mind of Hashem, then as great as you are, there are always miles and miles to go. And therefore, yes, you can have a person who's of immense intellect. He knows all of Shas. He knows Kol HaTorah Kulo, like Reb Chaim Volozhiner said about the Vilna Gaon. He said, he knows Kol HaTorah Kulo backwards at the level that you know Ashrei forwards. That's what Reb Chaim Volozhiner said about the Vilna Gaon. Yet, there was an awful lot of effort for him to do. There you go. What did he go down in history as? At the time, he fooled people for a while. What's he known as today? Does anybody say Agoyim before they say his name? They don't even say Zichrono Livracha. They say Olav HaShnabel. Right? But, let's say, bring up this point also. The Dubna Magid, right, told the Vilna Gaon. It's a famous incident. Which Mamish brings out this point. The Dubna Magid told the Vilna Gaon, also he always used to beg the Dubna Magid to tell him Musa. The Dubna Magid initially used to respond, how can I say, Kedosh Elia, you know, the greatest. But finally he said, you know what? He consented. And he told the Gaon, he said as follows, he said, first I thought that I can't tell you Musa because of the world separating us. But then he said, but then I realized that there's not so much of a difference between us. Small difference. Why? He said, everything that I know, you know too. So we're the same in that sense, right? Everything that you don't know, I also don't know. So we're the same in that sense also. So we're basically the same. And so what's the only difference between us? The difference between us are those things that you know and I don't know. Okay, up till now it's humorous. And then he finished off and he said, but what's that in comparison to what we both don't know? I said, the Goyen heard that, he started crying. That's the point. You can be the Vilna Goyen. You can be anybody, but there's still light years of accomplishment that you can still achieve. But whatever it is, back to our point, Yiftach was the case that it's important to realize that usually, despite what I'm saying now, getting back to our original point, if at the end of the day, you would be able to come and see who are the top 10 of our generation, you will probably have three of the Gdolei Ador and a nice collection of people that nobody ever heard of. Some learned, because they were sitting in their own corner and achieving very great things, equal to the Gdolei Ador, just people didn't know about them. The way Bishul Salanter would put it is, Hashem granted them the privilege of not becoming known as they prefer. And some people who barely can learn a Mishnah. But because of this point that we're making, those 10 people put in the same efforts, each one in his circumstances. This is the story of Yiftach, of a person who barely knew anything. But his whole life he spent striving and working and relentlessly pushing himself to reach whatever ideals he could. That's one of the greatest people around.
You mentioned that Hashem performed miracles for Yiftach.
That's right.
Why did, let's say, Hashem somehow protect him from the last moment?
That we'll see. That's what we're getting to. So the point here is that, with all due respect to everything we said, there's something that's very important to know, and this was something that Yiftach missed. And this was considered a failing on his part, which was the fault that caused what happened to happen. And that is, a person can be as pious as he wants, but without Torah instruction, it's going to be warped. It's going to be warped. The way the Medrash Tanchuma puts it is that, yes, Yiftach did not develop a relationship with Pinchas. Pinchas did not develop a relationship with Yiftach. And because of that, Yiftach's daughter died. Because a man can be whoever he wants. Without Torah, he's nothing. He has nothing. Not he's nothing. He has nothing. Then you have to realize that deep conscience and that real drive to do what's right and all of the pious intent have to be guided. Otherwise, in a general way, he might be approximately on track, but approximate can sometimes be the difference between life and death. Approximate can sometimes be the difference between terrible sin and piety. And therefore, this is the point here. Pious. But he needed that guidance. That was the failing on his part. And that wasn't just considered a failing on his part, it was considered a failing on the part of Pinchas as well. Both of them were held accountable for the blood of Yiftach's daughter. And both of them paid. Well, Yiftach paid the heavy price of his daughter herself. But in addition to that, it wasn't just that. Yiftach died a mere 6 years later. You're talking about a person chosen as a mighty warrior. 6 years later, he shouldn't have died. Yiftach developed a terrible sickness. I don't know if it was leprosy, exactly what it was, but something where his body, parts of his body would deteriorate and shrivel and drop off.
Was he already old?
It wasn't so old. They would deteriorate, they would shrivel, and they would drop off. This was his fate. That's why it says later, we'll see, he was buried in the cities of Gilead. That's how the Pasuk puts it. We'll see later, or next week. In the cities of Gilead.
He had a flesh-eating bacteria that
caused these things to drop. Rahman al Islam.
I only can extrapolate.
So
leprosy also, the flood, why the first fall out.
What's that?
Also leprosy.
Leprosy, right. So I don't know if it was this per se. Whatever it is, that's why it says later, he was buried. It doesn't, when he died, he was buried in the cities of Gila. Doesn't mean he was buried in the cities of Gila. Most people are buried in one city. But that's what Chazal say, he was buried in the cities of Gila. Different things fall off at different points, and they were buried in different
but
places.
But let's say, why is it
very
what,
tragic?
What was Gila? What's significant?
Well, that was his area. That's all I'm saying. He was from Gila.
Well, maybe, I'm just asking, could it be alternately, like, we don't know where Moshe Rabbeinu was buried, they didn't want to identify where he was buried?
No, on the contrary.
In the cities?
First of all, why should that be? Why is that? Why would he be different than anybody else? Because Moshe Rabbeinu and Yiftach? On the contrary, other Mepharshim say, Al-Derech HaPshat, that the reason his body parts were scattered was so that his memory should be perpetuated. He lost his only daughter. This way, at least, every town had had a grave of Yiftach.
Is that mutter?
Whatever it is, no. Again, the circumstances were unfortunate, but that's lamaisa the way it played out. So it played out that way. In these circumstances where a person loses a limb, they bury wherever it is. He might be buried somewhere else. Well, whatever it is.
If someone loses, let's say, a leg in war, but they survive, you still bury the leg?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure.
With a eulogy and everything?
That I don't think so. I'm sure that you have nice things to say about your legs, but the eulogies can wait till afterwards. Now, Pinchas was also taken to task, also in a very severe way, maybe even more severely than Yiftach. You know, Pinchas played a very central role in leadership for many generations. From that point on, he was never visited again by a prophecy. Hashem basically, we'll use these terms, stopped talking to him because of what happened here. I mean, this whole incident was the result of big mistakes, and this is a mistake that Yiftach, with all his piety, was held accountable for. There was one thing you could have done. You didn't know. You couldn't have known. You reached very great levels with that, you know, and one thing you should have done, and that was to seek instruction. Einama oretz chasid. An ignoramus will never be able to be truly pious. He can have a pious direction like Yiftach did, but you either have to know or you have to be getting instruction, because all the pious intent, well meaning, is not good enough in Judaism, because there's clear right and wrong, and right and wrong is complex and very, very detailed, and you have to be told. So no, all the good intent is not enough.
The Talmud Chacham is being faulted as well.
Very much so, because he should have gone to provide that news. You shouldn't have waited for him to come there, to him.
Can we put the blame on Hashem? I mean, he could have sent the Pinchas a message, you know, to save.
Here you're asking a question that can be asked on any case of Bechira. Person messes up very badly, perhaps Hashem could have stopped it. Hashem doesn't work that way.
Sometimes he does. How come sometimes he
does?
What's
that? The rule is that he doesn't. How come sometimes he does? That's the question. And then, when we encounter such a case, we'll explain. But that's not the rule. The question is on the exception to the rule.
For certain, people go out of the way that they shouldn't eat trade, that they shouldn't.
That's not the general rule. That's not the general. The general rule is man has his bechira. Maybe sometimes Hashem will sometimes deal with things to avoid people from failing in things that are outside the realm of their bechira. But we're in the area that a person, it's his realm of bechira, an area that he should be dealing with, the general rule is that that's his problem, not Hashem's.
So Hashem stops speaking to Pinchas. What's the Pinchas Eliyahu connection?
What's that?
If
perhaps Eliyahu, well, I don't know, if he was a reincarnation of Pinchas, then the question doesn't bother us anyways. Reincarnation is a different story. So already I don't know how that works. How he developed into Eliyahu, if he developed into Eliyahu, I don't know. I'm going
to
set that aside.
Well, there is Pinchas, something to it. There is something that is connected.
Pinchas, as Pinchas, never again got a nevuah. The spirit of Hashem departed from him. Okay. Now, this is what we get out of this, out of understanding it at this level, which, as we said, is strongly held by Chazal. There's another approach.
Yiftach had some kind of spirit. He made it in that Ruach HaKodesh, but he had some.
That's right. He had the spirit. It says the spirit of Hashem came upon him. And that's like we said last week. As the Rambam said in Mer Nevuchim, not all of these shayftim, or the truth is that Yiftach is used as the example of the Shevet who was not on any of the levels of the earlier Shevetim. This wasn't prophecy. It was a spirit of, like it says, a special courage, a special intuition. You can call it Ruach HaKodesh, but it's still a far cry from prophecy. Okay. Now, there's a different approach in Chazal. A different approach in Chazal that it wasn't as simple as all this. And there definitely were attempts made to find a heter, good attempts. Yiftach consulted with the Sanhedrin, it was brought to the top Torah authorities. But what happened? Somehow, things that today you ask a 13-year-old boy, he knows the answer. Somehow, all of Sanhedrin were in the dark. Also, it was a supernatural occurrence. Consulted with the greatest authorities at the time, is there a way out of my nether? And nobody found a way out, and nobody said that human sacrifice is just unacceptable no matter what. All the Sanhedrin didn't know. How could that happen? In fact, well, how could that happen? That we'll see the answer to in the next parak. There's also a punishment, a very uncanny punishment, very strange punishment. All the Sanhedrin shouldn't know the answer to such a basic question. This was something that Hashem orchestrated because of something that we'll see in the next parak, a sin that Yiftach was being punished for. Now, before we move on, I will give the approach. This is very interesting. You see it sometimes. But basically, very many of the Mefarshim will take an approach that is not in line with Chazal. And that's what happens here. A whole bunch of Mefarshim, a lot of the Chashim and Mefarshim, the Rambag and the Radak and the Malbim, they all basically they say that if you analyze the Psukim, there was something else going on here. She wasn't slaughtered. You know, Rabbi Benel also shows it. You just analyze the Psukim. First of all, when a girl is about to be slaughtered, she's going to weep over her life, virginity. That's what's bothering her, right? That she's losing her virginity. Her virginity is going to be wasted.
Well, that's how people say that. Oh, the poor girl, she's never going to get married.
Okay, but I don't know. I don't know if that's what you hear the girl herself focusing on.
For a woman, not having a child, though, is probably a death sentence. Meaning,
but when a woman is sentenced to death, is she going to spend the 2 months focusing on the fact that she's not going to be a virgin, that she's not going to, that her virginity will be wasted? Possibly. Okay. You know what? Possibly. 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 But it's strange. That's all I'm saying. If the whole focus is on the virginity,
isn't virginity
it's strange.
A keyword? Isn't virginity a keyword for babies?
Fine. Again, I'm not saying it's impossible. All I'm saying is that it's strange. But that should be this whole focus here is the virginity. That she and her, all of her girlfriends were also weeping over her wasted virginity. That's number one. And there are a couple of other, they already note that in the term of his vow himself, he said, whatever comes out of my house, it'll be for Hashem, I'll offer it as an oila. What are these two expressions? The Mefarshim say, the word vi often means or. It'll either be for Hashem or I'll offer it as an oila. In other words, it wasn't as simple as we said before that Yiftach just said something that makes no sense. It was rash. But he actually said two possibilities. He said, either it'll be for Hashem or I'll offer it from an oila, depending what it is and depending what's appropriate. This is how the Mefarshim construe what he said. And therefore they say that something entirely different happened here. He meant that if it's, let's say, an item, wouldn't have been an item, about something emerging, I'll dedicate it to Hashem. If it'll be a person, that person will be dedicated to Hashem. If it'll be an animal, I'll offer it as an oila. What did he mean? What he meant was, his daughter came out, you know? So she is now going to be dedicated for Hashem, meaning she's going to live secluded in a home by herself, not in touch with anybody else, and to spend her life in prayer and connection with Hashem. That's what he actually meant. Very interestingly, now Barbanel says perhaps that's where the concept of nuns comes from. That's what Barbanel says.
From Yiftach's daughter.
But I don't want to belabor that point because we don't really care where nuns go.
Why would the Barbanel be?
We're more interested in where they're going, and that's Gehenna. I don't want to get too into that. But whatever it is, they say that that's what actually happened. So therefore, yes, the big significance of this was that she wasn't going to marry. That was really the big significance. It's not a tragedy to spend your life praying. It's a good thing, right? She was going to grow very greatly. She was going to spend her life as a prusha, right? And she was going to attain very, very high levels. What was the problem? The problem was that she wasn't going to get married. That was what the focus was. And when it actually said that they would come to weep with the Zohar of Yiftach 4 days a year, it actually meant that they got together with her. That's what the Mefarshim say. They got together with her 4 days a year. She was completely detached from society, except 4 days a year. Her friends would come and get together with her. That's how the Mefarshim put it. The Ramban takes issue very strongly with this approach and says that no, it's as Chazal say it, but there are prominent Mefarshim who say this, and therefore it ought to be mentioned. Okay.
Oh, but the Ramban would say she was actually killed?
The Ramban. That's what Chazal say. Yes, as we discussed before, that's what Chazal said.
That's the halachic murder?
Yes. That's as we discussed. It was a tragedy of the first degree. But now the story of Yiftach is not over. And we might say that, again, we're going to continue seeing the difference, again, manifestation. This is a very important point here, understanding both sides of the coin. Now, on the one hand, we're talking about a very pious person, imbued with very, very sublime spirit. While on the other hand, if a person is lacking instruction, the picture is not going to be right. In a very general way, it might be right, but there are going to be a lot of things that are off. Before, we saw something that was all the way completely off. But look at the continuation. If the Yiftach comes back victorious, Vayitzaek ish Ephraim. Some people of Ephraim got very upset. We remember Ephraim already from the past. Remember Ephraim from the people of Gibeon. Ephraim was a very, very proud shevet. We might even say they had a superiority complex. If this, there'll be such a thing, there's such a thing. Ephraim was one of the greatest shvatim of Klal Yisrael, one of the strongest shvatim of Klal Yisrael. After Moshe Rabbeinu, they had the glorious period in which Yeshua ben Nun of Ephraim was their leader. Also later in history, you see that Ephraim is the key player. Ephraim is the main shevet of the ten shvatim, always the counterpart of Yehuda.
Were they the ones that broke out of Egypt?
What's that?
Were slaughtered by the Philistines?
Some of them, yeah. Now, therefore, in general, there was this feeling of superiority. Now, obviously this is going to depend on which people of Ephraim you're dealing with. You're dealing with a person like Yeshua, he wasn't running around saying, I'm from Ephraim. Neither were the great sages of Ephraim. But, lower down, this is usually the way it works, lower down you go in society, the more people just identify with themselves with the group who they are, rather than personal value or personal content. What happened was as follows. So Ephraim were a very proud shevet. The sibling rivalry, the bigger picture later in history, was between Ephraim and Yehuda. That was the big picture. It was also always between Ephraim and Menashe. Ephraim were always higher on top, Menashe was kind of like a more lowly shevet. Now, Ephraim had a very hard time handling that this Gil'adi, even within Menashe, we have to realize that Menashe was split into two, right? There was the part of Menashe that settled on the Transjordan and the part of Menashe that settled in Eretz Yisrael. The people of Menashe in the Transjordan were even more inferior, call it racially, socially, in the way they were viewed, than the other half of Menashe that was still in Eretz Yisrael. So you have Ephraim, Choshev HaShevet. Then there's Menashe. And then there's Menashe and Eretz Yisrael. And then there's the as far as they were concerned, the scum. This is how they viewed it, as we'll see soon. Like the lowlifes on the other side of the Jordan. And now all of a sudden, here comes a Yiftach, right? Who, coarse person, emerges as the leader of the Jewish people. All of a sudden he's in charge of Ephraim. This is too much for some of them to swallow. Not just the fact that he's the leader, but the very fact that he had the nerve to win a war without them. And this was their complaint. Vayitzaek ish Ephraim. Some people of Ephraim made an outcry, Vayavor Tzafayna, and they came northwards, meaning a force from Shevet Ephraim actually crossed the Jordan northwards to Gilad to make battle, to avenge this terrible chutzpah. Vayomru liYiftach, and they said to Yiftach, Madua Barto lihilachim bivnei Amon, how did you have the nerve to go battle the people of Amon? You didn't call us to go with you. Therefore, the consequence is clear. What do you do in such a situation? We will burn your house down with you inside it.
These weren't tzaddikim, were they?
No. And that's why I stressed before that we are talking, the pasuk is actually going to say, it's according to Moshe Mefarshim, the pasuk is going to articulate soon that we're talking about the lowest of Shevet Ephraim.
We seem like we're talking about Rishayim.
One would think so, yes. Only Rishayim tend to burn people in their homes. Vayera Yiftach alein. So Yiftach said to them, Now let's note, this should sound familiar to us, because a very similar thing happened back with Gideon. Gideon was also from Shevet Menashe. Gideon also had the nerve to go out and win a battle without invoking the obviously needed help of Ephraim. And he also had tinus on him, right? But do you remember how he responded? He responded, he said, "Did I do anything? I started the battle, it's you who won! Like, what could I have done without you? I did nothing! This is your victory!" That was Gideon's response. But once again, here is another manifestation of the fact that we're dealing with a different caliber of a person. But even so, let's see how he responds. Yiftach responded to them, meaning he's basically responding to them. This low caliber is not manifesting as yelling and screaming. It's manifesting as he's presenting the facts. He's not backing down. He's not going to be like Gideon was. "I'm nothing, you're everything. Let's just live in peace." He's presenting as a woman. Let's get the facts straight. Don't come and say, "I have spent many years fighting the people of Ammon." Like we said earlier, so this is already in the land of Tov before the battle now. He was busy, he was at the frontier defending the people around the people. The people of Ammon were shepherding all the time. He says, "What are you telling me stories? This has been going on for years. And plenty of time I appealed for your help and you never came." Right? And now all of a sudden I have a victory and you say, "Ooh, we should have been there." Right? I saw that I'm not getting any help from you. I took my life in my hand, meaning I put my neck on the line. And I went to fight the people of Ammon. And Hashem delivered them into my hand. Again, you have to note how natural this is, the style of speech. It doesn't say I won. This was the mentality. "Why are you coming now to fight me?" Meaning, in other words, Yiftach is responding, "Let's get the facts straight. Your accusation is ridiculous." So the truth is, it's also a little more than that. It wasn't just that they had tainus that he fought the battle without them. They were basically saying, "One minute, you became now the leader of the Jewish people because you won this battle, because that was the deal. We don't accept your authority. Because we're saying that we could have won it just the same. You just didn't tell us about it. So you stole. You stole the leadership." So now, he's answering them. So first of all, he's answering them the facts. Right? Let's put things into perspective. Rabbi Isai, I've been asking your help for years. If I gave up after 15 years, I'm justified. Right? But then he makes another point. Let's note, coming from Yiftach, again, to note the nature of who the simplest of the Jewish people are. He says, "One minute, was there a natural victory here? What are you saying we would have won the war? Was there a natural victory here? This was supernatural. This is clearly Hashem's doing. It's ridiculous to come and say we could have done it just the same. Who said? This wasn't me. Hashem decided to do it. So what do you mean, what you did we could have done? What did I do? So you're coming and fighting Hashem? You have tainus on Hashem?" So, but they were here for war. They were serious. It wasn't just that they didn't send them an email. They had come with a whole force. They crossed the Jordan. They made the whole trip. They were ready for war.
It's like the secret key.
Huh?
It's like a mafia.
Okay. To put it that way. Vayikvoitz Yiftach is called Anshei Agilon. And it was a serious situation. Yiftach gathered together the people of Gilad, Vayilochem es Ephraim, and he battled the people of Ephraim. Vayaku anshei Gilad es Ephraim, and the people of Gilad smote the people of Ephraim. Ki amru plite Ephraim, because the lowest of Ephraim would say, "Atem Gilad b'soich Ephraim b'soich Menashe." What are you, Gilad, Ephraim Menashe? That was what was hurting them so much. These are the nobodies, right? The nobodies came and achieved this glory. That can't be. We're Ephraim. The only reason they felt this way was because they were the scum of Ephraim. That's what the pasuk is saying. The scum of Ephraim is to relate this way. So this is basically what was going on. This deserves also elaboration. It continues in not such a pretty way, but we're going to save this for next week. Continue.